information does. And you'll find this posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And it'll be posted shortly after this webinar after this ends today. And what I'm going to do here is share with you something that was shared on the ConspiracyCon website. And that is Steve is known as an official special guest because he's not only a past speaker, but he's a real supporter and strong attendee of the event itself. And I'm just going to read you what they listed as an introduction for knowing about him on their website. Steve Hempling learned about individual rights and the Constitution from his father, who was active with a coalition trying to stop unbacked paper currency from being issued during Kennedy's presidency. Steve has a degree in electronic engineering and has worked at Texas Instruments and in Silicon Valley, California. In 1985, he helped co-found Free Enterprise Society and challenged the IRS to prove it had a law to require Americans to file income tax returns. Today, Steve continues as a current director of Free Enterprise Society, and 25 years after founding his organization, the IRS still has not proven that anyone is required to file and pay an income tax. At ConspiracyCon 2007, Steve adeptly outlined the basics of the income tax problem and its relation to the Constitution. After addressing a variety of important specifics on this issue, he shared some of the successful strategies he and his team used in the courts. Steve, along with his presentation and ongoing work to help others, is a very solution-oriented individual. We were honored then to have had him as a featured speaker, as we are honored now to have him back with us as an official special guest. He, like the other guests, will not be presenting, but he will have a booth in the exhibit room and will be available for interviews and consultations. Steve is a man of integrity, and he is friend to this conference and other forums across the country like it that address the press truth. We encourage you to visit him. And so that's the introduction that they had for him at the event. And with that, I want to welcome Steve Hempling to the webinar today. How are you, Steve?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Great, great. We did visit a webinar. I guess I'm trying to remember when it was. I know it's been probably a few months ago. And I know you shared with us at that time, and maybe just for folks that maybe didn't hear it or maybe don't remember exactly, maybe give us a little bit of your journey of how you came to have the experiences that you had. What did you go through that taught you what was really going on? I know our topic today is, if I remember it right, I believe it's free enterprise, individual rights in the Constitution, and in regards to the IRS, and I think if we can have a little bit more of an understanding of what happened to you, and what we need to know that you learned from that particular experience, that'd be great.
Yes, well, I was I used to file income tax returns, and then one year I had a little bit of a problem with them, and we went to dealing with the IRS, and I was fairly unhappy with the way I was treated, and it brought up some questions. So as I started to try to get answers to questions, no one seemed to have any. This was in particular in dealing with either IRS rules or IRS laws. What are my rights in regards to that? I talked to, of course, the IRS people. I talked to some attorneys and legislators, and no one really seemed to know. So what I did was I went to a meeting, probably around 1979, dealing with income tax, and the person there was talking about how it was voluntary. And I didn't think the guy was, his lights were on, but I wasn't sure he was home. So he suggested to me the next day that he said, why don't you call the IRS up and ask them if it's voluntary? Now, I don't suggest necessarily anybody do this, but this is what I did. I called the IRS up the next day, and I asked the agent that I talked to. I said, is the IRS or income tax voluntary? And the agent said, yes, sir, it is. Well, this surprised me right there because I kind of expected the agent to set me straight and say, well, of course, it's not voluntary, and the law is this and that and the other thing. But he said, yes, it is voluntary. And I said, well, I thought for a moment, and then I said, well, good. I don't want to volunteer anymore. But then the agent said something pretty interesting to me. He said, but, sir, you have to volunteer. Is that ridiculous?
Yeah, it's like dry water or something, you know.
Yeah. Well, I hung up the phone at that point. A little while later, I don't know how many months, it was getting close to April 15th, and I said, well, I still didn't get any answers, and that phone call just made me more curious. So I finally walked into the IRS building. It was in San Jose, California, their main building. I don't know how many, 10,000 people or something worked there. Walked in without an appointment, walked up to the person at the desk there and said, listen, I've been to a meeting that said I'm not required to file, and I'm thinking about that, and I wanted to talk to your people first, or before I made up my mind, or something like that. And I don't recommend this to people either, but this is what I did. And they were very accommodating. This was in 1980, probably, about then. And they gave me two agents in a little room there. I just asked the agents. I gave them that I've been to this meeting and wanted to know what they said about it. And they were happy to talk. They talked all about, what an honor it is to be an American and what a great honor it is to pay my fair share. And then they went into all the things the income tax are used for, food stamps and this program and that program. But they never talked about the law, which is kind of my question. So when they were finished, I brought out the 1040 instruction booklet. And I brought out the Internal Revenue Code. We started talking about that. Now, one of the things interesting about the 1040 instruction booklet is it has a Privacy Act in there. Have you heard of that?
Heard of the Privacy Act, yeah.
Well, you probably have heard of it, but the Privacy Act is very important because there are rules in regards to what kind of information the IRS can give out. And we'll get to that in a little bit, but I do want to get back to the Constitution here for a second and the Declaration of Independence. You know, the people that created the Declaration of Independence said the government are instituted among men and derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Would you agree that the governor is you and I and the people listening to this program?
Yes.
Yeah, of course it is. It's not the people in Washington, D.C. I mean, I think sometimes the people in Washington, D.C. believe that, but that's kind of an idiotic position to take because if you look at the Constitution, even briefly, you can see that the Senate and the House of Representatives did not exist before the Constitution created it. So their positions are completely reliant on the Constitution. But yet they pretty much they ignore the Constitution once they're in office. So let's go to the Constitution. Article 6 says, this Constitution and the laws of the United States was made in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land. Now that tells me the supreme law is the top law, that there isn't anything higher than our Constitution. Now the founders had something higher, and that was their spiritual beliefs. But in our government, civil government in our country, the highest power was this Constitution. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the constitutional laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. So if California or any state passes a law contrary to the Constitution, it would not stand. I mean, that's according to the Constitution. It says if they pass a law contrary to the Constitution, it's notwithstanding. Now, does that happen? If California passes a law contrary to the Constitution, does it fail? Does it get thrown out by the courts? Any idea? Really doesn't. It doesn't very often.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Once in a while, but most of the laws, even though they're contrary to the Constitution, stand. Why? Because, again, we're not using the Constitution like we should. The judges take an oath to defend this Constitution, but most of them have not even read it, in my opinion. we knew a senator here in California, Senator Don Rogers out of Kern County. He's not a current senator right now, but he, when he was in office, he said at the best, out of 120 elected officials in the state of California, maybe six have read the Constitution. And I personally, I think he's being generous about that number.
I think so.
Now, if we continue on in the Constitution, it said the senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. And they all do take an oath to support this Constitution. But yeah, it's interesting if you do that and you haven't read the thing. I think that's a problem. Because if they haven't read it, they don't know what's in it. So let's see. We have a case here, Norton versus Shelby County. It's a talk about the Constitution and how important it is. And it says this: an unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no rights. It imposes no duties, affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it has never been passed. That's pretty strong, isn't it? And we in Free Enterprise Society and our members all across the country, and we've got members in about a dozen foreign countries, all really believe in the individual rights that are laid out in the Constitution. There is not a document like the Constitution in any other country. It's only this country that has that type of office or our Constitution and rights for the individual. We're the only country that puts the individual rights ahead of the rights of the many, so to speak. That's socialism or communism. So let's talk about filing income tax returns for a minute. Do we have breaks or something coming up, or?
No, we actually don't. There's one thing I was going to maybe ask you if that's appropriate at this time.
Sure, go ahead.
There's a lot of in the Patriot community. You can find a good bit of debate over different issues, and some things can be hotly contested on both ends of it, and some things could seem a little divisive or whatever, but. There's one thing that I've heard come up quite a bit, and I've heard incredibly good arguments on both sides of it. And one is the whole thing about admiralty law, and the fact also about the Constitution being suspended by certain legislation and declaration of a bankruptcy for the U.S. and the formation of a corporate entity that basically is not abiding by the same rules, which, as we would say, the Constitution, that pretty much they work outside of that. What's your take or response to that type of information?
Well, I've read quite a bit on it. The thing is that it would be there's no authority for the government to operate outside of the Constitution. There's no authority for them to authorize anything to operate outside of the Constitution. So if these acts and these court cases mean anything, they would be set aside for fraud or being unconstitutional anyway. Personally, I'm going to support the Constitution and the individual rights. The reason this country has become the greatest country the world has ever seen is because we followed the formula of the Constitution. Now that we're not following it, we now have the similar problems to other countries. We have debt, and unemployment. We've got all kinds of problems there that we really haven't experienced too much in the past. And admiralty jurisdiction, of course, that's always been available in the high seas through the naval and stuff. And I don't, while I've looked at the evidence, I just, if that's really the case, then there's nothing to fight for, which I don't believe. I don't believe that for a minute. I think these guys are doing these things behind closed doors. There's one axiom in law says fraud vitiates everything in its path. These guys might sit there behind closed doors giggling and laughing about all the things they're doing or crossing their fingers when they're talking to you and getting you to agree to something you have no idea what you're agreeing to. And I just say, that's fraud. And that vitiates everything in its path. I mean, from the Social Security number on down, we have been tricked and lied to. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't mean anything. because we have a corrupt legislature, we have a corrupt court, and we have to start straightening them out.
I think so many people are you know, they understand that we've got major problems, and we can all go on all day, and you know, outlining and listing out all the difficulties we've got. But the big thing we're all asking is, okay, but how are we going to turn this thing around? What do we do? Where do we roll up our sleeves and dig our hands in? And what would be the most effective way to turn this beast around and get back on track again?
Well, education is the first part. I mean, the people listening to this program are doing that. Because we have to, the schools do not teach us the Constitution. They don't teach us our rights. They don't teach us really anything about much about history that's accurate any longer. And we have to start learning that, because all the things that are happening today have happened before in history in one place or another, or in this country, and our answers are right there. The current administration in Washington talk about a new way, what they're talking about is fascism or a form of communism. And that's nothing new, but most people don't know that anymore because of our school systems don't teach this information from the past. So they think it's something new and untried. It has been tried and never worked. It always fails. And the big experiment here is our Constitution giving the individual rights and powers, and that will only work as long as they stay educated. So I personally am an optimist. I think there's all kinds of things we can do. The only reason a lot of these things are happening is because the people are not paying attention or not standing up. Now, there are a lot of people that, you know, may know what's going on and don't think they can do anything about it, and I really disagree with that. One person can make a big difference. We just have to talk about these things and keep educating as many people as we can. The people that are trying to take everything from us want us to give up, want us to think there's no way to win. And they've been effective at that to some extent, but I think they're pretty powerless. When the people want to stand up, we can change things in a hurry in this country when people start to wake up. It's been done before in the past. We've done that's the way our system works. When the government starts taking too much, or the people have stood up and taken it back.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's certainly needed. I agree with you. I think education is extremely important. I think some people, though, almost get stuck in analysis paralysis, what I call it. It's like they're so busy educating and they're so ensconced in the information phase and the learning and talking about it and all that, that they never had the rails. They never touch down into some activity of some sort. Where they do a little something, they carry it out, that knowledge out. They almost stew in their own juices and just, you know, fry themselves there. It's sad to see in a way, because they can talk about it forever. They're very proficient in their discussion of it. But as far as any type of action that they may take, there is none, or very little. So I think there's a balance there. We need to arm ourselves with tons and tons of information and understanding, and then we need to look and see, you know, what could I do? Is there something where I could be effective? What would be the most effective thing or things that I can do? Well, I could do this, or I could do that, and whatever it is, because if your effort and that of millions of other people are all added up together, now you've got huge effort occurring combined. If you look at only your one self and then say, I'm just one, and yeah, you can see it that way, and that's a very limited way, and just say, well, it doesn't make any difference. I might as well do nothing because it's just me. But if millions of people say, I'm one, but I'm one powerful one, and I'm added to so many other ones that it's huge, so let me do that, which I can do. Anyway, that's my rant.
Well, I understand the... You know, it seems like an overwhelming problem, but I personally don't think the problem is as complex as some want to make it be. They even the admiralty issue, that's not an easy thing to get into. To me, it's a lot more simple than that, because it's almost, you could almost put it in three words: it's good versus evil.
Mm-hmm.
And most people know the difference between right and wrong. When you deal with constitutional injustice, you're dealing with, you know, doing the right thing as much as anything. And that's what the founders wanted the Constitution being citizen-run to do. So, you know, there's a lot of injustice in the system today, and people can see that, and that's why they're becoming uncomfortable. That's why the Tea Parties are growing, because they see innocent people going to jail, innocent people losing their homes. So these kind of things are happening with not only with our government watching, but our government involved in doing the taking. So people know now something is wrong, but they can easily correct it. Part of it is the ballot box that they're doing, you know, this year, but it's going to be a lot more than that. As they educate themselves, they're going to do a better job of voting or get a better job of involving themselves. And you know, a simple thing to do is just support the organizations that are doing something that or that you feel are doing something well, good, because I know with Free Enterprise Society, we've been very effective at keeping people out of jail. We won a lot of cases. We've educated a lot of people. And the more donations we have, the more newspaper articles we run, because we've got to reach more and more people is all we have to do. So that's probably one of the most important things that a new person can do is to help reach new people or donate to groups that do that kind of work that they like. There's plenty of groups out there, and most of them live on donations, I know.
Yes, they do. Well, you know, there's like you were mentioning. I mean, we saw in this last year to year and a half a lot of activities going on. People going in droves to town hall meetings and really standing up and finding their voice. And we saw like the Tea Party gatherings and just people all over taking action and standing up and speaking their mind. But we do know a lot of those people can be easily swayed. Someone can get up in front of them and sound good and spout some of their issues and lead them off down a dead path or a limited discussion where they can't really get into the dynamic stuff that really makes a big difference, and just stay on some of the basic free enterprise issues. I guess it's called what I call freedom light, you know. but I think the one thing is that I think a lot of people wonder is how can we assist the people, like the hordes of people that come to Tea Party meetings, to make the jump from a little bit of understanding to, say, like the understanding of an avid Ron Paul supporter. You know, someone who really understands the Constitution and defends it tooth and nail on every single issue and holds issues up to that measuring stick and sees where it falls short or where it hits the mark. I mean, what do you think? How do you think we can reach those people and help them make the transition from where they're at to where they really could be?
Well, everyone attending the Tea Parties, I think, are allies. Now, the thing is, they're fairly new to this. I know you and, you know, others and maybe many people listening have been studying for, you know, a long time, maybe years. So a person who's just looking at this for the last few months is not going to be at the same place as someone who's studied for 2 years is or 5 years, for example. So to me, they are our allies. And when I've been to several of these Tea Parties, and it looks like the people there really are kind of looking to government to help solve the problem. One of the things we have done is the Tea Parties I've been able to attend is we have flyers, and we have a sample flyer on our website at freeenterprisesociety.com just for Tea Parties goers to hand out there. We've handed out thousands of them so far, and I've been members around the country to try to hand them out at their Tea Parties. And the basic message there is to start learning the Constitution and start taking responsibility for yourself. I think they're barking up the wrong tree to go try to get the government to solve these problems when the government is the cause of most of the problems that they're talking about. And, under the Constitution, we have to start taking action and, you know, making decisions for ourselves. And those are decisions that will work better for the country than letting the government run everything without question.
Yes, certainly. Well, you know, I've run into, to different people that I realize that they're starting to wake up. But so many times, you know, like you'll say, they'll ask things like, well, but why in the world would somebody want to end the Fed? And it's just like you get a blank stare when you try to explain it to some of them. They have a hard time making the transition. I guess they've been conditioned over time with all the propaganda that you have to have a Fed. It's like a part of American society. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like it's ingrained in the whole structure of the system, when really it isn't. It's a horrible abomination or aberration from what freedom is all about. It's moving in exactly the wrong direction. Or, you know, understanding about the IRS, they may think, yeah, but you got to be a loyal American and pay your taxes. You know, we've got to have all these things that we need, like a strong defense and, you know, a good system that works to protect us and all of that. Yeah, you've got people that, for lack of a better word, a lot of them are really neocons. You know, they have some freedom principles that they understand. You know, like some of the big government programs, they say they like smaller government. But when it comes to the IRS, it's like, oh, well, you know, anyone that is a good American, a good patriotic American pays their taxes without question. They don't understand the issue. So to me, it's kind of a challenge of how to bridge that gap. And sometimes it takes a lot of patience and a lot of discussion if you're doing it one by one. Sometimes you can point out really good bodies of work, like certain books, certain information. Maybe there's even a DVD that you can hand them, or, you know, something like that. Invite them to have a little bit of discussion, to be open to some possibilities, maybe ask some questions, plant some seeds. I don't know. Those are some of the things that come to mind for me. Is that you kind of concur with some of that, or what do you think, Steve?
Well, sure. You can't club people over the head. I mean, that's a lot of people make that mistake. You know, they learn something and they can't understand why the next person doesn't get it. But they took 6 months or 12 months to understand that issue, not 12 minutes. And you're right, the Fed and the IRS, I mean, they've been around the entire lifetime of everybody, most everybody here now. And most people don't understand that it's not even federal. I mean, and to spread, you know, too much dis, you know, to say you're not trusting in government even too much can make people, you know, not listen to you. So we have to, you know, get them to answer the questions, find out what they're interested in. But give them a little bit at a time. And then what a lot of our members do is, if they're talking to somebody that's interested, they give out one of our catalogs. They order extra catalogs. It's 32 pages of articles about the IRS. And our website also has free information on it. Free seminar is there that goes through all the details of why the income tax. See, no average person that we can find is liable for the income tax. But in other words, it's a according to the IRS's own website, it's voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not against mandatory taxes. We're not against constitutional taxes, but the income tax is not one of those. And I want to point something else out for the listeners. Income tax is not the only tax. People are so worried about the income tax, they forget they're paying other taxes. Income tax was only 43% of what the government took in 2009. They can do without the income tax because they're making so many unlawful expenditures. When you start learning the Constitution, you'll see that the government has 17 powers, 17 places they can spend money. But they are spending money in hundreds of areas that are reserved and should be handled by the states themselves. Healthcare is one of those. There is no authority for the federal government to operate healthcare. That's a state issue if they want to do it. And the state also has the power, in my opinion, to tell the federal government that we're not participating in this national healthcare. I don't know how many of them would do that, but they have the power to do that in all the areas that are not covered by those 17 powers. And that would be very interesting.
Yeah, that would. Well, you know, you touched on something. I know so many people will seize on that that phrase, promote the general welfare, and they think it means to provide. That's the way they interpret it, to provide the general welfare. So any goodie or handout that certain people won't, they're entitled to it. Just dig in and get all your goodies, whether it's health care and all kinds of government, being on the government dole for every kind of conceivable thing. But that was never anything constitutional at all. It's just been totally, it's run amok, out of control.
Well, that's not a listed power. That was the preamble. I mean, that was like a heading to the subject that's coming up. And the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, which was the discussion about the Constitution, clearly defined that. And there were some people worried about that clause, by the way, when they wrote the Constitution. So the courts did take advantage of it. at some point and, you know, use the general welfare clause as an escape clause. But still, they, you know, people when they read the Constitution, they, you know, they don't have to, they're not going to read these things into it as easily as the courts do, because the courts have a conflict of interest, in my view, because they're paid by taxpayer money, especially when it comes to income tax issues.
Yeah, let me ask you this, and speaking of income tax issues, I know you've had a unique experience yourself, and as some other people have, Joe Bannister, and I mean a number of people come to mind, Sherry Jackson and Irwin Schiff and many others who have taken on the IRS, and in some cases the IRS has just totally thrown out any proceedings and just railroaded over the top of them, disallowing them to enter any type of information before the jury or before anything, and just pretty much shellacking right over them. I'm wondering what, you know, it's very hard to, some people have done it, like Tom Cryer went in and beat him in court, and a few other people have had that distinction, but too few, a lot have gone under trying to do it. Either they got put away, or they got destroyed financially and otherwise. You know, various things have happened. But if it's so hard to beat them in court, what do you think is the answer to defeat the IRS, or to get rid of it, or bring it into, you know, under control, or whatever it is that, where do you think we can move it, and how do we do it? I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, I think it's just education. When enough people know what the IRS is really about and that the income tax was never required, they're going to say no. And to me, the income tax has one foot in the grave already, because this word is spreading. More and more people know all about the IRS, and the IRS is very concerned about it. They, and Congress is as well. I think they're very concerned. They're talking about the fair tax and VAT tax and just about anything else to replace the income tax, because I think they believe the income tax is not going to be around that much longer. But the problem with the, you know, I'm not necessarily against an alternative tax, but there's a couple things that I say there. One is, we don't need to replace that 43% because the government's spending money illegally. And it doesn't matter how much we give them, they spend more than we give them. For example, in 2009, they collected $2.1 trillion. That's a record amount of taxes. And then, but they spent $3.5 trillion. I mean, ARG, that's another record. I mean, Clinton was a big spender. Bush was a big spender, bigger than Clinton. And now Obama's making them both look like, grade school children buying lunch or something because he's spending so much.
Doesn't matter what party, they just keep spending more, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what party. I mean, the Tea Parties and stuff are great, and they're going after Republicans, and they're getting rid of the incumbents, and I think that'll probably benefit us. The problem is they won't be that concerned, you know, a few years, 5 or 10 years down the road maybe. And I'm not defending the Republicans, although they talk a better line, but most of them haven't done anything different too much than the Democrats. They did take a hard line on the medical bill, but they would have, if it wasn't that, they'd be spending more money on something else. They just have a track record of that. We need, I don't care what party they're in, we need honest people. Ron Paul's been there 20 years and never been bought off, for example. I think he's an honest guy. We sent up in California, Tom McClintock went up there to Congress now. He's probably our Congress. He was like our Ron Paul of California. So we got another probably an honest guy up there. So it can be done.
I haven't followed him. Is he holding? Is he holding good, or too early to tell, or what? How's he doing?
Well, he hasn't. You know, you don't see his name in the news because he's not doing anything. He's not supporting any of the big legislature or anything like that. No. And I'm sure he joined with Ron Paul and his Liberty Caucus that he had up there.
Good.
So, that Liberty group doesn't do a whole lot because there's still a minority up there. California, I mean, you have to have so much money. Like, we just had the primaries yesterday. They make Whitman spend $70 million of her own money. You know, there's even the parties can't compete with that. So, just like the governor's. Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead and finish. I do have someone has a question, and we can take that in a minute if you want to finish your thought there.
Well, that was in California. The last governor we elected was the same thing. Schwarzenegger spent his own money. So that's kind of interesting, at least in this state, that the parties aren't financing these things.
Yeah.
And what I liked about Schwarzenegger, I'm not saying he's a great governor necessarily, but he was not an attorney, and Meg Whitman is not an attorney. To me, attorneys are really one of the problems we have in these offices. So.
Yeah, they are. The other thing I think would be a problem is someone that will become a chameleon. They'll go with what's there. They'll figure out what the power structure is, and they'll kind of begin to sway in the direction of playing the game so they can climb the ladder and be in the right group, the so-called right group, and that sort of thing, rather than standing up and be the dissenting voice and standing on principle. Unfortunately, that can happen. And some people even go in and they sound great. They just sound awesome when you hear them first campaign. And they get in and you say, man, that guy or that gal, they didn't work out. Whoa, man, they sure changed. And maybe because they weren't that firmly rooted in principle, they thought that they kind of had that propensity to move in that direction initially, and maybe believed it to some extent, but then they begin to sway with the pressures and the opportunities that present themselves, and the next thing you know, they're just thrown in, they're in that soup, and they're not distinguishable as someone that always has a measuring stick of the Constitution against each and every issue, unfortunately. But I think we're going to see a lot more pressure for people to stay on principle this year. I think you're right about that.
Well, I mean, Washington has become, if you're trying to be an honest person, you're laughed at up there. It's kind of like some of the poor schools. You're laughed at if you really want to study and get a degree. It's peer pressure, but they, being honest is like, goody two shoes or something. Well, that's what we need. If they're not goody two shoes, they belong in jail, in my view. And we're not holding them accountable right now in Congress. And that's going to change. I think in a big way, the pendulum is starting to swing back the other way. And I think many of these elected officials are going to find themselves on the other side of the bars. Maybe some judges too. And that's going to be important. When that starts to happen, you're going to have legislators come out of the woodwork to help clean up the act to save themselves, and that's when things can change in a hurry.
I think you're right about that. I look forward to that exact thing happening, because it seems like too much in the past. It almost got so bad that people said, well, they're all that way. What do you expect? I mean, if you're a politician, that's what happens. You're corrupt and you do all kinds of stuff. And they almost think that it's so common that it's like, well, why bother? They're all that way. You're going to single one out. But now it's like, no, we see something happen. We're going to confront it. And it's about time it got confronted big time. We need some major cleanup. Okay, we've got Douglas in Oakland. Says, great show. Can Mr. Hempling please digress for a moment on the state income taxes? The feds won't even enforce the Constitution on themselves. If we were to abolish the IRS, can you describe the process of how the states would follow suit or how they might resist? Did that question make sense?
Okay.
Do you want me to read it again?
Yeah, well, most states, not all, but most states, California's, that's where I'm from, is one of them. They piggyback their authority for the income tax based on the federal law. Those states, I don't think would have much choice. Those income tax systems would if the income tax goes away because of constitutional issues, the state's going to have the same constitutional problems. Now, the state could, and they actually have more authority to tax than the federal government does, and they could replace that money, maybe possibly through other taxes that are constitutional through the state constitution. But the income tax itself, it's a system of confession, and you have to fill out these forms, and you have to sweat over them, and you have to. And if you make a mistake on them, you could go, you could really get fined, or some people are in jail for making mistakes. They still, nothing, no intent. I mean, the system is unfair, first of all, and it's unconstitutional. When you, I didn't get into those issues here today, but that's on that seminar that's on the website. I mean, when you file an income tax return, whether it's state or federal, you waive constitutional rights. One of those is the Fifth Amendment, not to testify against yourself. Because any information on a tax return can be used against you in a court of law. That's how people go to jail. And a lot of people don't understand that tax evasion is not a tax crime at all. It is, tax evasion is a form of perjury, which means All that is you lied to the government. And to the government, that's very, very serious. Them lying to us apparently is not even a crime, but us lying to them is a felony. And it's called tax evasion when it comes to tax forms.
You don't mean the,
so
the
I think most state income taxes would fail if that happened, and but the states have a lot more power, like I say, to replace that money. The states, that money should stay mostly in the state, except for there's the I think it would be a fair statement to say that the federal government has used and abused every taxing authority that it has. So even if the income tax goes away, all the lawful taxes, the excises and duties and imposts that are currently there, some of those might be adjusted, but those are at least constitutional taxes, like gasoline taxes. You're not going to go to jail for not buying enough gasoline last month. At least right now you don't. So.
You mean we don't have to buy our certain quota each month?
Right. Get a notice you didn't buy enough gasoline, buy 10 more gallons or face jail. I mean, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, these are excise. Lawful taxes are consumption taxes. You buy the gasoline. That's why the gasoline, the people with the, they make the cars more efficient. Now the gas taxes went way up because the states lose their revenue. So they have the power to do that. And as, if the cars in the future run on water, the state's going to have to find a whole new way of taxing us, because it won't be gasoline taxes any longer.
Well, that'd be funny, yeah. Well, it's a lot of people say, well, yeah, to think that someone would could actually force you to, or say you didn't meet your quota of buying gasoline or something like that. People say that's absolutely absurd. It would never happen. But you think about something we probably said would never happen. With this health care, I mean, it's basically that the government is forcing you to buy a product, not give you any choice, but to make you buy that product, and you face some legal action if you don't, and you have to buy it from certain companies, and that's the health bill, the health insurance bill. I mean, that's basically, isn't that basically what they're saying?
Yeah,
I never remember a time in history where you are forced to buy a product and to buy it from certain providers. That's insane.
No, that's it's unprecedented, and it's totally unconstitutional. Now, the reason they think it's constitutional because the states force insurance on you for driving your car, which
not to drive. You could choose not to have a car and not to drive.
Right. You do have some options there on the state level, but for all practical purposes, if you don't have a car, you can't work and live the way it is in society today.
Right.
Unless you're in the in a major city, but very few places have good public transportation in California.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I think it's seriously flawed that insurance. I mean, it makes you still buy uninsured motorists. What's the purpose of that? If you're a driver that takes care of things and is responsible, you're going to buy the insurance. You're going to buy the uninsured motorists for those who don't have it. I mean, you can't legislate people to have money. The problem, we got in the valley here, we got probably closer to over 20% unemployment. And these guys are seasonal workers, farm workers, only working in the summer. Where are they going to get another $1,000 for insurance? I mean, and then what the police do is come along and take their, $200 car from them for not having the $800 insurance. So, and then they can't get to work at all when they do have a job. I mean, I don't see that really doing anything to protect us or help us. Because those laws just kick people when they're down. And anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I don't believe that you should. I think that the ultimate test of freedom is do I own my own life? If I do, then I shouldn't be forced to protect my own life, whether it's a helmet law, a seatbelt law, or whether it's insurance, that protects me. I think that those sorts of things, or even for it to be illegal for me to commit suicide, if I do own my own life, the ultimate test of that is, can I dispose of my own life? Does anyone else have a claim on my life and say that I don't control it? That's really the ultimate. It sounds ridiculous, but when you think about it, it really is. It gets down to the basic principle of it. anyway, we're getting a...
Well, the laws can't stop you. I mean, that's the thing. But in general, if a law requires you to do something, it's probably unconstitutional. Your listeners may find this interesting. The first country to ever have seatbelt laws is the USSR.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of laws communist country passed all the time. And you have to do this. You're required to do this, or you're going to be fined, or you can be jailed. That gives them control over the people, because anytime they want, they know that people aren't going to follow a lot of these laws or even know about them. They can arrest them pretty much at will. That's starting to happen in the United States. You can't follow all the rules and laws that you have, because California passes 15,000 of them a year, and how many people read them here? Many of them do probably affect the average individual, you know, not lawfully necessarily. But on the driver's license and the army and the insurance, another thing I noticed in California, there was a lot of co-ops, and all of them have basically been outlawed. Co-ops were people getting together, a couple hundred people getting together, putting money into a fund to take care of themselves. I don't think there's anything illegal about it, but when they went to mandatory insurance, the only insurance they accept is the insurance that the insurance commissioner will accept. So even if it's valid insurance, you know, relative, you know, give you good coverage and everything, if the insurance commissioner doesn't put their name on the list, you can't use it. So most of the co-ops just disappeared, and they were better than the insurance companies because they weren't for profit. They were cheaper.
Yes. We have Sean in Melbourne ask, is there any hope in recovering a bank taking based on a notice of levy or stop a garnishment from a NOL to a private sector company?
Well, we do have a membership, and we have a support service that deals with those kind of issues, and we do have claim forms that you need to put in. If you had some money taken from a bank, in order to preserve your right to try to get that money back, we need to make a claim on that. Same with the any money withheld out of the paycheck. And then the notice of levy also can be attacked. Because, simply put, you know, you don't owe the tax, and that's the way we would approach it. Now, on our website at www.freeenterprisesociety.com, you can get our membership information downloaded, our catalog, and you can look at that. Our phone number's on there. I'm going to give the phone number, too, if you're not necessarily on the Internet, and maybe they have to be for this call.
But, well, no, actually,
209. Oh, okay, I'm at 209-966-7040. That's 209-966-7040. You can call that number. We can send out a printed catalog to you with all the membership information in it. And we even have a legal defense fund that hires attorneys and everything in dealing with the IRS. We specialize in people who don't file returns because we think that's within the law and within your rights to do so. But there's no magic in getting that back necessarily. It's a lot. It would certainly be easier to try to keep that money from being taken. In the event of a bank, I mean, the problem with the banks today, they might as well be part of the federal government. They're so heavily regulated. And
yeah,
the employers are just plain afraid of the government, so they don't want to mess with them. But there are some things we can do, and we have stopped some of these levies. Can't guarantee that, of course.
Yes. Well, you know, I see on your site, freeenterprisesociety.com, you list a number of different events. You list some Tom Crier events and a Freedom Action Conference and Valley Forge and different things that are going on. You have your convention coming up October 23rd and 24th, right?
October 23rd and 24th, yes, in Sacramento, California. We don't have a lot of details on that yet.
What kind of things go on there? From past events?
Well, they're a lot of fun. If you enjoy the Constitution and freedom, I mean, it's like a smorgasbord of freedom. We've got exhibitors from all over the place with authors and organizations that deal with these issues. We've got many authors, the freedom-loving attorneys. This time we're going to have some elected, or at least candidates, coming in since the election year. And we have Richard Mack, Sheriff Richard Mack, for example, is confirmed coming in. We're going to have several tax speakers, including Tommy Crier, coming in, who's one of the authorities on the income tax now. He beat him. You're just not liable for the taxes. But it's really fun. I know people can feel alone and scared and frustrated because he, you know, people around him don't really seem to get it. But you know, it's for me, it's always fun too. I mean, I'm, you know, I have the same problems when you're in the public. For it's like 2 days when you go to these things. It's you feel normal for a couple of days because you're around like-minded people, and that's as much fun as. I mean, it can be fun, and of course, it's very educational. But it's to be physically together, be able to, you know, hang out at in the for dinner and meet a bunch of people is just it really. I think it's very encouraging. I think it's good, so you don't feel so alone. But it also shows you that you're not the only one that feels this way.
That's important for us, and. You know, I think the amount of networking that goes on at these, the people you meet, the associations that you forge there, are very valuable and very powerful to take part in. And like you said, it's a real inspiration and an encouragement to see so many others and hear what their stories and what is happening in their particular endeavors. So, I think that's very important for us to do that whenever we can. In fact, you were just at the ConspiracyCon. I was going to be going up to the last minute, but some family things came up, and I just wasn't able to make it after all. I was disappointed because that was a last-minute thing. How did that go? I know you've been a few years. What kind of experience was that? Was it a pretty good event?
Well, I think it was a good event. The turnout was a little higher. I think the turnout at a lot of these events are higher. And, of course, the tea parties are huge. We had there was like 7,000 at the tea party in Fresno. But we had, I would say, over 300. I'm not positive, but the ConspiracyCon, and that's a good turnout for that event. They had, you know, all the speakers aren't necessarily in the constitutional area, but there's a few of them that are. And so it's generally a pretty good event. And the Bay Area is one area that does pretty good conventions, pretty good size conventions. So.
Okay, good. Well, it sounds like it. I know it seems like there are a number of notable, some of the people we've had on past webinars that even were just attending and having a booth there that weren't necessarily speaking. Some were speaking, but because they, you know, to be able to connect with people that were attending. So it did, you know, I like when they cover the really hard topics, and that's part of what they did there. We've got.
The one was a Dr. Kaufman, which is I thought he was the best, at least for me, was most interesting because he's a ecological scientist, I guess, but he easily disproves the more global warming theory with the same charts that Al Gore used to try to prove it. So I thought that was very interesting.
It's great to use their own materials and their own words and everything against them in the show where it's just totally fraudulent. I think these guys are starting to realize that there are a lot of people pointing at them and calling them for the frauds that they are. It's about time. There needs to be a day of reckoning. Let's see, we've got Linda in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. Isn't the IRS the left arm of the Federal Reserve? So why not also educate people Ron Paul style? The Fed must be abolished and the IRS will go with it.
Well, that's a good question, and she's absolutely right. The IRS and the Federal Reserve System are pretty well tied together. They were passed in the same year. And when we get rid of the income tax, we can get rid of the Fed a lot easier. I mean, the Fed's they go together, and it's a little hard to explain. We don't really deal with the Fed so much, but we do articles on the Fed and direct people to their websites, and we do support Ron Paul. But it takes a little bit. But basically, the paper money system, when they took the silver backing off in 63, around there, 65, we started a hyperinflation system. And the Federal Reserve went to paper money. Then the only thing to control that would be something like the income tax, where they can just set the amount year by year. And the income tax has been as high as 90%, for those that don't know that. So it's an outrageous system. If we had real money with lawful backing, we just didn't need these issues. And prices remained the same. When we had silver backing, even with the Federal Reserve in, when they were required to have silver backing, prices did not increase. In 1963, you could buy a Volkswagen Beetle for $1,799. Those were silver dollars. You take $1,799 silver dollars today, and you can buy a pretty nice car, not just the cheapest one on the market. So things are still getting cheaper if we had lawful money.
It's instead of the fraud that we've got now. Certainly true. It really is. I want to remind everybody that we're speaking with Steve Hemplin of the Free Enterprise Society. And if you do have a question for Steve, go ahead and if you're on the phone line, just hit star 2 on your phone keypad, and that way we'll be able to unmute your line and to enable you to ask him your question. If you're online, just type your question in that small question box right underneath the link and submit that to us, and we'll make sure that the question gets asked. So I invite you to do that now. I know we're just going to go on a little bit longer. We do have a live caller that I'm going to unmute their line. They're in Collingswood, New Jersey. Are you there, Lewis?
Yes. Yeah. It's just a very simple question. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can
hear
you.
Yes, go ahead, Lewis.
All right. What do you know about the Bank of International Settlements? And whether or not this will that'll be like a central bank for all the reserve banks in the world, all the central banks all over the world. So about the income taxes, that's true that the interest, what we pay for in income taxes, it basically for the most part should go to pay the interest on our debt to the central banks, to the international banks. I read about it. But how true that is, I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's a good question. As far as the people around the world on the banking, that would be, I assume it's talking about the owners of the Federal Reserve, which also owns the other, the central banking systems of England and other countries. I've read about them. That's not something I spend a lot of time on. As far as the income tax paying the debt, I have some verification of that. We've had people send us checks that they've sent to the IRS, and on the back it says deposit to the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, Federal Reserve Bank is a private bank. It is not a public bank. It is not government-owned. A lot of people don't realize that. Even if you go to the Federal Reserve website now, they pretty much admitted in their paperwork that they're not government. They're not federal law. They shouldn't even, the name is misleading, and it was intended to be.
Right.
No reserves, right?
Yeah, it's complicated, but I don't know what's the truth. Since basically the Bank of International Settlement is supposed to control all federal banks, even though they are private, there's a connection to the government. We know it's not a branch of the government. By being private, they have to respond to some international type of banking system. If not mistaken, the Bank of International Settlements, it's in Switzerland, and they recently moved to a huge building. They keep a very low profile, and I can't find all the facts about it. It's been said too much about that, but I don't know what's true and what isn't.
Well, I'm not sure about that either. I mean, we concentrate more on trying to get our own country here in order. I can hardly find out what's going on here, no less than knowing what's going on in Europe for sure. I mean, you can read about it. I read a lot of things, but I'm not there. There's no way to verify it from my position. But it is true that we borrow our money now, since the Federal Reserve took over, instead of just printing money interest-free as we did in print and coining our own money through our government, where it never had any interest and any debt, so to speak, we now have to borrow it from the Federal Reserve, and we have to pay it back with interest. And that does not help us. I mean, you have to, put yourself in that, the government in the same position. If you're heavy in debt, you're not gaining anything. And can't borrow your way out of debt either, like they're trying to do.
Right. Yeah, that's a huge argument about that. There are two different types of a school system. One basically implies that inflation, the boom and bust cycle. and the other one, the deficits are basically a huge problem for government. So there are two different schools that actually present the economic problem from different views.
Well, you may be right, but in my view, if we were on constitutional money, we would not be dealing with anything international. We would be taking care of it ourselves. So.
Yeah, right. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think thank you, caller, on that. That was interesting. I think just a little comment or something that comes to mind on that is that I think one of the dangers is that we can look to international bodies or systems to aid in something, to correct something, to make it. I definitely do not want to lose our sovereignty or merge ourselves into any type of international system, or to look to them to be the big brother to come along and save me from this evil U.S. system, because that's almost like a trick. It's like, jumping from the frying pan directly into the fire. It's a very dangerous lure to look to some international body to...
Well, I think we just did that here. I mean, even with the vote for Obama but not too long ago. I mean, they weren't really... I don't think most people were voting for Obama as much as voting against the Bush and the Republicans. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
There's no...
They get desperate and they want to change, and they don't even look at what they're asking for. I mean, they're... you've got to look at that before you do, pick a direction.
Yeah, it is a shame that they have such trouble distinguishing what's the lesser of two evils that they just know, well, the best thing is at least not stay with what we've got. And if we, if we vote Republican this year, we're going to just have more of the same. But they got more of the same. The same agenda keeps accelerating. If Democrats are in, yeah, there's a little more focusing on social programs. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the trappings that they use. But the same agenda continues with the wars and the IRS and the Fed and all of the scams and the huge spending and the growing, ballooning government. All of that never really changes. It's the same elite behind whatever puppet is up there smiling and saying that I'm doing wonderful things for you. Anyway, we could certainly go on about that. We've got Mike. Oh no, we've got Frank in Long Beach. Prior to even discussing the tax issue, why not request their delegation of authority to establish jurisdiction in the matter? That way, the ball is in their court to be in compliance long before tax issues are broached. What say you? Thank you.
I missed the word. Jurisdiction of what?
Jurisdiction. Well, let's see. I'll read it again. Prior to even discussing the tax issue, why not request their delegation of authority to establish jurisdiction in the matter?
Okay.
That way the ball is in their court to be in compliance long before tax issues are broached.
Well, I think that's a good idea. We've done quite a bit of that. The problem that I've seen, we've been dealing with the IRS for 25 years, the problem that I see is the IRS has become the outlaw. not just the IRS, but the government has become the outlaw. They don't follow these laws unless it's convenient to them. So the delegation of authority order is something that they're supposed to do. I agree. And a lot of them don't do it. They don't follow the law properly. And sometimes that benefits people, but if they decide to ignore it and move forward, people can still get hurt. So we still have to get people educated on the way the IRS operates. I mean, give you an example, when a Supreme Court even rules against the IRS on a case, we've seen memos from the IRS saying, well, we've seen this case and they kind of ruled against us, so we decided to ignore the case. I mean, I don't know who these people think they are, but they certainly don't think the law applies to them. So.
No, they really
anyway.
Don't. Yes. Mike Y. in Oglesby, Illinois, says, why can't we encourage Congress to enact legislation that would order the IRS to investigate waste, fraud, and abuse of taxpayers' money in government agencies instead of the IRS always going after individuals?
Well, I think that would be great. But no government paid agency has ever been successful at auditing themselves.
Yeah,
and that's one of the problems. I mean, in order to do that, it would have to be a private or independent kind of entity. Now, the founders set up three private entities, and the executive and legislative and judicial. And the judicial is really supposed to be protecting us from this type of legislation. The healthcare bureau should be thrown out. But here's the government has become, you know, smarter and more devious as they go on. For example, in the Patriot Act, they have a secret warrant they can now issue, supposedly. And you can't even tell anybody that they came to your house if they do this to you. That's a crime to tell someone. That sounds idiotic. But anyway, this old woman was 87 years old. They served a warrant on her. And she said, "What's this all about?" She handed it to her 89-year-old assistant. She's a librarian. And both of them got arrested because she wasn't supposed to tell anybody about this warrant. And when they took her to court, they were going to try to put them in jail, these two old women. And the judge was just flabbergasted and upset with the government. But before the judge could rule against him and set aside part of the Patriot Act, they dismissed the case instead of let the judge rule against them.
Wow.
So now the judge is powerless to do anything about the Patriot Act in that particular matter. And so they're, you know, that was these people know exactly what they're doing, and they're violating the law. And I don't see how they can even look themselves in the mirror every morning.
Yeah. Well, every criminal, and it's interesting because it's almost like, you know, people really think about it. Sometimes to go to an agency and ask it to investigate itself is almost like going to the mafia don and complaining about the mafia and asking him to help you get it investigated and cleaned up, and he just winks at you and says, "Don't worry, my man, I'll take care of it for you."
We just have too many criminals in Washington. I mean, 435 congressmen, 100 senators, and you know, maybe aside from about six of them, all of them belong in jail, in my opinion, along with the executive department positions. So I'm a little cynical, I admit. I mean, when a person gets elected to office, I think that person should immediately start serving his prison sentence, because I know he's going to lie, cheat, and steal to us. So, all right.
Yeah. We've got Ed in New York. He says, "I revived some checks from a state government quasi-corporation and assigned them to the company that I was working with. I did not sign or cash them. Also printed on the back above the assignment, all rights reserved. Now the IRS would like me to pay income taxes on those monies. What are your thoughts on this? Thanks."
Well, if the IRS sends you a letter, we have a department that can help you answer those letters. I mean, the fact of the matter is you're just not liable. The average American is not liable for the income tax that we can find. There is no statute making you liable. The IRS's own website makes reference to voluntary tax system over 1,000 times. And we have several documents from saying it's a voluntary assessment and or voluntary compliance and self-assessment system that we have. Self-assessment means you assess yourself. You sign and say you owe the money. Voluntary means you do it voluntarily. Although I did call an agent once. I called an agent up on that voluntary. I told you that. And they said, but I never finished that story, I don't think. But I told the agent I don't want to volunteer anymore. And then the agent said, "But sir, you have to volunteer."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's ridiculous. If it's voluntary, it's either voluntary or it's not. It's not you volunteer or go to jail. So in fact, if you look at the cases, there are people going to jail for this. They're not going to jail because of the law, in my view. They're going to jail because of the ignorance of the juries in these cases and the ignorance of the general American. We have to educate people to the extent that they can't get these convictions. And I think we can do it. In fact, the IRS's record with failure to file cases are pretty bad the last 10 years. Pretty bad.
Yeah.
They lose a lot more cases than they want to admit.
It seems that so many cases where, I mean, if the jury is able to hear all the facts presented in a case like that without the judge, you know, blocking everything, then it's pretty likely they're going to come up with a decision in favor of the person, you know, the person that's not paying their taxes, because they prove that it is voluntary and they're not liable.
Anyway, back to this person's question. I mean, what we try to do in Free Enterprise Society is always change the burden of proof. We don't have our members act like they're attorneys or anything like that. I mean, so we would be asking the IRS, well, you know, I'd be glad to pay taxes on this. I'd like to know what section of the law requires me to do this. Because if it's the law and I'm required, I want to do it. You know? And they have a hard time answering that, since I don't think there is a section that it says that. At least I've never seen one, and they've never supplied one to me.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm wondering if there's something that you would extend to our listeners. Would they be able to contact you for a complimentary initial consultation in regards to understanding how you might work with them in the future, what kind of things you may do for them? Would that be a reasonable thing?
Well, sure. They can call me and we can talk about it and we can see if that's something that we can handle for sure.
Okay.
And because you know the IRS, they push their weight around and most people don't know what to do about that. And you go to a tax attorney or accountants and all they say, well, you got to do whatever the IRS tells you to do, which they're no help. And it's only going to be groups like this, and we're not the only one around, but there's only going to be groups like this that are willing to stand up to them. Because they don't have the law behind them. The law is against them, as far as we can tell, every way that we look at it. The law is on the people's side here in this country, under our Constitution, and we're intent on keeping that Constitution alive.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful document. It really is. We just follow it. Frank in Long Beach asked the question, we've been already touching on this, how can your organization be effective if the IRS ignores the law?
Well, that's a good question. Well, what we try to what we do with members, we answer the correspondence the best we can. We answer it, and hopefully maintaining the constitutional rights. But we're not tax accountants or attorneys. We don't. It's not it's not a tax issue to us. It's a procedural and it's a constitutional issue. So the best we can do is continue to pound on the Constitution, your rights. Continue to ask them what the law is. Change the burden of proof to them to prove that they can, you know, that you owe the tax. And we've been successful sometimes at that. Now, sometimes they take, if we have to, we can't. We have taken them to court. And the courts aren't, the best thing around either, always fighting the IRS. But we have got some favorable decisions. We've kept several people out of jail using the courts. We've gotten millions of dollars worth of property back, illegally seized by the IRS back. We won one case in particular. Remember, at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals against United Airlines on an unlawful levy. It's not easy, and we certainly can't guarantee it, and I don't know what our percentage of success is, but, I probably wouldn't give any better odds if you're in Las Vegas or something better than 50-50, because there's so many, you can run into so many corrupt people along the way. But when we point out the procedures to them, at least their administrative procedures, they're fairly good at operating under those. They won't tell you what they are, but we know what they are, and that can help get a little better remedy in these cases.
Yes. Okay. Well, I just, this has certainly been enjoyable today, and I know we've been, a little over an hour and a quarter. We'll probably wrap it up here pretty soon. We have Ed in New York says volunteer exclamation question marks. No one that got drafted in the military. Everyone took one step forward and then took the oath. When they took the step forward, they volunteered. Isn't it interesting? I think he's pointing out here how clever the government is with getting people to volunteer for all kinds of things.
Oh, I agree. They're devious. I mean, you look at the Internal Revenue Code. If you start reading it, it's a bunch of words, and they're English words, and you think you understand them, but I mean, you go through that, and the section will read, and it almost makes sense to you. But then they say you have to look at these other three sections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't really finish this section without reading those other three sections. So you read those other three sections. Well, fine. And those three sections give you more sections to look at. And if you keep trying to go through this, pretty soon you're pointed back to some of the sections you've already read. Still not understanding what the heck you're reading. It's a masterpiece of gobbledygook.
So you mean they like the old saying says, they baffle you with BS and they leave you confused and frustrated where you don't know which way you're going or what the truth is or
Yeah, well, they have these chapters. They have these chapters in there. You got to be very, very careful. For example, in one chapter, they'll say the definition of state is District of Columbia. And then they have all these references to, you know, to any state, to any state, to any state. And then in the one definition of person in the Internal Revenue Code, in one of the chapters, a person is a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's misleading, any person. And when they're dealing with the codes, it says person in the codes. But it means corporation. If they wrote corporation in the codes, there would be no question. But you got to remember to look up that definition in these things. It's idiotic. And I don't like, you know, the people that wrote it, we should throw away the key.
That's right. Yeah, they masterful at deceitfulness. But, you know, it's like you said, you volunteer for something. It's like the filing a tax return. I can call it a confession form. I mean, and a volunteer form. It's like you step right in, you traverse right into their system that way and say, yeah, I'm a party to this. I'm totally involved in this, and I'm liable, and I abide by all your rules and regulations, whatever the heck they are, if anybody can understand. But if we understood, it's like they said, you step forward and take an oath, or, you know, volunteer when you're going to go into the service, or you whatever it is that they get you to volunteer to participate in. And if we were to just think about that and say, wait a minute, do I want to be a part of this? Do I want to volunteer and say, yeah, I'm a person who's responsible for this situation, whatever it is? We have in Monticello, Kentucky, it looks like Lyndon. Are you there, Lyndon?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, we can hear you.
Okay.
Hi, Lyndon.
How you doing? I recently, about a year and a half ago, went back to work after trying retirement for a few years for different health reasons. I'm a sole proprietor, single operator truck driver. I've not filed taxes in 9, almost 10 years. I had a little bank account. I kept nominal amounts of money in that I would receive my payments in and use it to pay bills with. They came about, sent me some letters, put a levy on my account. The bank held it for 23 days, then sent them the funds and closed the account. I called the IRS up, talked with a lady that spoke very poor English, and asked her if she could show me a law, and she said, well, no, she could not show me a law, but it was a mandatory. I said, no, you show me where it says mandatory, it's voluntary. And she says, no, it isn't. And she says, well, are you going to file these past years? I said, no. She said she would note it in my file, and that was the last of it. But my question is, do you have any suggestions on how a person could open up a bank account without worrying about another levy coming along?
Well, that's a tough question there, because I don't know how to do that. The banks are all part of, I mean, they might as well be just part of the federal government the way they're regulated today.
Exactly.
And they will do anything the federal government tells them to do. I'm convinced that most banks would probably kill your in-laws if the IRS told them to do it. That's how bad
right.
it is.
Right.
And they wouldn't think they're violating any laws, because you try to tell them they're violating the law when they're taking your money.
Right.
They don't care, because they think it must be the law. The IRS told them to do it. So killing somebody, if the IRS told them to do it, that is okay. That's not okay. And
exactly.
So the only thing we can do, if they took money illegally, we can do a claim for refund on that and possibly sue.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't guarantee we can get the money back, but we can attempt to do that.
Uh-huh.
For the future, you need to keep, you know, if they're after you for money, the banks are not a good place to keep it. You want to keep very little in the banks.
Right. I've got most everything changed to where it's I'm functioning through different types of quick pay cards out there, Comdata and T-Check system, things of that nature, where these companies I pull freight for, they throw the money
in
there.
Yeah.
get it out.
Yeah, you're trying to maintain privacy under the Fourth Amendment. Absolutely illegal. Absolutely something that Americans have the right to do, but something that the government does not want us to do. They don't want us to have guns. They don't want us to have any privacy.
Right.
And they, of course, you know, they pretty much have tossed the Constitution aside at this point. So
yeah,
it is people like you and me and the other listeners that are going to make a difference. So one judge told me, he said, you guys may not think you're making a big difference. He's a judge that sometimes we're in front of with different things. He says, you may not think you're winning, you know, even, you know, you're not winning a lot of cases sometimes, he says, or, you know, you may not think you're getting anywhere, you know, if you're not real, real big. But he says, and this is the judge's words, he said, I think the Constitution would have been dead long ago except for groups like you. Because the judges do talk about you in the back rooms, they talk about you too. Anybody that stands up against them, they talk about
right.
it. They, you know, some of them hate us. Some of the judges back there hate you guys, but other of them say, well, it looks like they're right, and it keeps the discussion going, and it keeps the Constitution discussion alive. And I think that's very, very important. And the more people that stand up to them, even if we don't win in the courts, to me, you're a winner when you attack somebody. You go back and try to get your money back. Because you cost them money, you cost them time. They can't be hurting other people while they're messing with you. And maybe you'll educate somebody along the line. I don't know.
Oh, I've educated a lot of people over the last 8 years since I got involved with Aaron Russo's video.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And many, many other things. Another concern that they're going to come at me with, and this happened to Ed and Elaine Brown, I'm paying some of my bills, like my insurance premiums for the business and a few other things, via postal money orders. And that they tried to claim that Ed and Elaine Brown was trying to hide their money by paying their bills with postal money orders. Do you see an issue there?
I don't see an issue, although, you know, I've been in court and I've seen the U.S. attorneys bring in postal money orders and say, look, this person uses postal money orders like it's some kind of crime. And
right. It's
just so ridiculous looking to me. I mean, I can hardly stop, you know, from breaking out laughing in the courtroom. They're just so serious about it. I want the post office to know is using postal money orders is the Justice
mm-hmm.
Department thinks that's a bad thing.
well,
it's not. It's perfectly legal. The money orders are same as cash. They're better than checks in a lot of ways.
Appreciate you taking the time to listen to me. And I did pull up your website, and I will be getting in contact with you and see where we can go and just put my situation up front and center and let the public know. I've educated my county sheriff with Richard Mack's book, and they know who I am, what I'm about, and what I believe in, and so I'm not hiding from anybody.
Well, fantastic. It'd be a pleasure to talk to you.
Same here. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Lyndon. You'll be in good hands with Steve. He's a good man to work with. Yes. Okay. Let's see. Let me just check real quick, see if we've got some more questions on the Okay. Here we go. Frank in Long Beach says that's why it's called the Internal Revenue Code. Everything is encoded within a monolithic volume of thousands of pages that would be impossible to read, much less decipher. Thank you for the wonderful service Free Enterprise Society provides. That's more of a comment, I guess.
I like that analogy of the code, yeah. Sounds accurate. It is accurate.
It is. It definitely is. Mel Mason in Austin, Texas says that you are doing a great work. Please tell us how we can join your organization. Thanks. That's a good question.
Well, you need to get our applications. We can send them to you. You can get them off the website at freeenterprisesociety.com, or you can call in at 209-966-7040. That's 209-966-7040. And call in. We can send you out a free catalog. In fact, we're going to be in Austin here. We've got a meeting coming up there July 10th. That information is on the website. And if you're on our mailing list by then, we'll be mailing the information on that. We're going to be bringing Tommy Cryer, the attorney, out of Louisiana there. That should be a really great meeting there.
Great. Okay. Well, with that, I think we're drawing close to the end of our webinar, and in just a moment, Steve, I'll have you leave us with any final thoughts that you have. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. First is to remind you that the replay of this webinar, as well as several pages of past webinars, will be posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And take advantage of that. Certainly, you know, arm yourself with that information, but certainly share it also out with other folks. You can send it out to your list, share it with different people, direct folks to the website and that type of thing, because that's how we're going to win this thing and really turn it around, by getting the information out as far and wide as we possibly can, and not just have that information in our own heads. Tomorrow we'll have Dr. Stan Monteith on the webinar at the same time, and he's quite good. He, like Steve, has also been a speaker at the Conspiracy Con that we did the live streaming for.
Oh, Stan's great.
Yeah.
He's one of my heroes.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And then we also have I want to remind everybody that you can get the streaming by demand. It's unlimited access indefinitely. I think I may have misquoted a cost yesterday that I thought it was without checking, but you can go to expostop.com. That's expo, E-X-P-O-S-T-O-P, .com, and then click on Conspiracy Con, and then you'll see there where you can access it. And you can get a passcode and access it unlimited from now on. All of the different lectures that occurred there, not only the audio, but to actually see it as if you're in the room, which is real important. There were a lot of visuals used by many of the speakers. So take advantage of that. And I think this would be a good time to share any final thoughts that you might have for Steve.
Well, I just wanted to say that, I want people to, you know, try to keep a positive attitude. I think we can make a difference. I think one person can make a difference. And so I'm going to encourage all the listeners to really not give up. The other side's trying to make it, you know, so we, you know, feel like we have to give up. But we don't have to. I mean, we have a lot to lose if we just let them roll over our rights and stuff. So, and one person can make a big difference. So just keep up the good work. And hopefully we'll talk again. And maybe you just join Free Enterprise Society, or get in touch with us at freeenterprisesociety.com or at 209-966-7040. Thank you.
Yes, I certainly encourage everybody to do that. I thank you again, Steve, very much, and keep on doing the wonderful work you're doing. Thank you, everyone, that has joined us today on the Republic Magazine webinar. And I want to say that we hope to see you all again tomorrow with Dr. Stan Monteith. He's also a giant in this field and has a great contribution to share. This officially ends our webinar. Everyone have a great afternoon and evening. Take care.